Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast. This is officially the 100th episode of Five Rounds. We didn't even realise that until we saw the post up on Visionaries Global Media. 100 episodes of just giving you week-to-week UFC content, and this ain't the end of it. This is just the beginning. We don't intend stopping, and we're just going to plough through 2021 and beyond. But obviously with me, as always, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Absolutely brilliant, especially with this being our 100th episode. We've been able to create so much content, and like you're saying, this is only the beginning of our long journey with my little side of coming off of the five rounds interviews that are dropping in January. It's just more content that we're going to be creating, and then even better, I get to do it with my dad. So it's brilliant.
From what started as basically a fun little side project because we had the equipment to record podcasts, has gone on to be the longest serving podcast that I've got on my resume, and also one of the most fun because, like Carlos said, we get to spend time watching these UFC events that we're both really massive fans of, and we get the opportunity to talk about it afterwards. We just can't get any better. But there is no UFC event this week. We rounded off the UFC calendar last week. Normally we usually get like an end of year event, but UFC have given us so much this year. They deserve a couple of weeks off at least. But that leaves us with no event to talk about. So Carlos and I decided we'd give our year end awards the official Five Rounds year-end awards. So we've got a handful of awards here that we're gonna virtually give out, and just like talk about some of the highs and lows of UFC in 2020. So I think we'll start with the low, really, the disappointment of the year award. For me, there was two big standouts in this category. The first one being Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman. The fight that everybody was calling out for in that welterweight division. Masvidal obviously coming in with so much hype after the brutal knockout of Darren Till, and then the knockout of Ben Askren. It was everybody's favourite fight, and Street Jesus was just the man. And then we had Kamaru Usman, who's the reigning defending welterweight champion, not really known for having kind of the brutal knockout power, but were able to really dominate and smother his opponents. And that's what we got. The disappointment is that we just didn't see that kind of dynamic attacking Masvidal that we saw in his previous fights. And we saw Kamaru Usman really kind of suffocate Masvidal to a very decisive victory, but ultimately very disappointing victory in terms of action. But the one I'm actually going to go with is, again, in the welterweight division. The comeback of former champion Tyron Woodley after kind of many kind of pushes for him to want a title match back. He comes back against Gilbert Burns and gets demolished, and then comes back against Colby Covington. Really kind of, and Colby, fair play to him, we don't really like him on this show, but fair play to him, he really tried to make this fight sound like a massive grudge match. And when it come to the action in the octagon, Tyron Woodley was just non-existent. His comeback ended like a fart in church. He was absolutely embarrassed and just took an absolute pasting for five rounds until he finally got TKO'd by a fake rib injury. And it's very likely that we may not see Tyron Woodley again in the UFC. And he just felt like he had no motivation to be in that fight, and the fact that it was built up to be this big grudge match, that was a massive, massive disappointment for me.
Two quality picks there. You've obviously nailed on the head with both of them. It was a very, like you say, Masvidal and Usman fight did not live up to the hype that was surrounding it, then obviously Tyron Woodley was definitely not living up to the hype he was setting out for himself. But for my picks, I had a couple for these, and my second pick was Dominic Reyes, just for how much he was looking past Jan, just because he were on good form against Bones and basically declaring himself the champion and the uncrowned champ, just because he did well and he thought he won the match. Whereas when he got faced off against Jan, he were already looking past him. He were thinking to himself, I don't need to fight him. When I do fight, I'm going to beat him because I'm already the champion, just because I did well. And he quickly realised, hang on a minute, Janet's like a fucking truck here. And he surely ate his own words. But my top pick of definitely 2020 has got to be Sugar Sean O'Malley. Just not just his fight with Vera, just the attitude he had, he still has now, particularly there, is like, oh, I'm still 12-0 or something. It's like, no, you're not. You're still giving beef to Cody Garbrandt who had the best knockout of that event, and then you basically use the bullshit excuse for something that was just so little. Like, he was on a good win streak. He was on three or four win streak, weren't he? And then obviously lost to Vera. Now he could have handled that a lot more. He could have just licked his wounds, took it on chin, said Vera were the better fighter, and moved on. But he didn't. He's having this sort of bitchy persona about him, which to me he's not a fighter in a way. So he's definitely the disappointment of 2020. That award, he's got his name all over it.
That's an absolutely great pick, Carlos, and it's one I should have considered, to be fair, because it was disappointing, and it kind of it speaks about how much UFC bull up these fighters to thinking like the shit don't stink and that they're unbeatable. And then when they face someone who is better than them as a fighter, or they have mistakes, the UFC drops them like hot shit and they move on to the next big thing. And I just hope that backstage Sean O'Malley is kind of learning from this, from that loss, and wanting to improve rather than thinking that he's unbeatable, because that fight clearly proved that he was. So let's go into the next award. I want to look at the breakout fighter of the year. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who's debuted in 2020. It can be someone who's kind of just forced their way into like the public's perception because of great performances, or just making themselves stand out in some way for the UFC. For me, this was a little bit more clear cut. I've gone with Khamzat Chimaev, from debuting in July when he beat Dusko Todorovic in the second. He then fought 10 days later, beating Reese McKee in the first round, where he broke the record for the fastest ever turnaround in modern UFC history. And then in September, just a few more weeks after that, he absolutely destroyed Gerald Merschart in the first round to win three straight fights. And if it wasn't for him and his opponent Leon Edwards contracting COVID at the same time, he would have potentially fought four times in this calendar year. He's had such a buzz about him that a lot of fighters are scared to take a fight against him. I've gone with Khamzat Chimaev for my breakout of the year.
Yeah, I really cannot argue against that. He was literally my breakout star of the year. For what he's been able to do inside the octagon. And when we're talking about the UFC and really breaking out, not just as a fighter, but getting a lot of fans behind you and having the UFC willing to push you, that just goes to show how much of a star he potentially could be if he keeps on, obviously, his winning ways. And I think, I don't think it's official yet, but him and Leon Edwards, is it official yet?
It's booked for the middle of January.
So when that fight goes ahead, which, like you said, was supposed to be scheduled for this year, so he would have had four fights, and that's a lot more. But I was a little bit looking at Kevin Ollins, but it's then in a way I was looking at like the actual breakout of like the public. Like, a lot more people are speaking about Chimaev than they are Ollins, which is unfortunate because both of them are really good fighters. But in this case, we can only speak about one person. The hype train is only big for Chimaev, and it's only getting bigger, as we can see.
So next, let's go and go over some finishes. Firstly, let's talk about the submissions of the year. I've got a few on my mind. I've got Jimmy Flick, where on his debut he jumped into a triangle, dragged Cody Durden, his opponent, down to the ground, trapped his arm, and got a first round finish of a really kind of impressive way to end your debut fight. I've got the obvious one of Khabib smothering Justin Gaethje with his takedown, then switching into an armbar, then transitioning that into a triangle to put out the title contender and retain his title. I've also got Mackenzie Dern tricking Hannah Seifert into leaving her leg in position so she could get an ankle pick and a leg lock in the first round in their fight in May. But the one I'm actually going with is Ariane Lipske. She pulled off one of the most unique submission finishes to a fight I've seen in a long, long time, when she had a calf slice on Luana Carolina, and she was really kind of folding her up into all kinds of positions, like almost like a figure four in the WWE. And then she was able to transition that into a knee bar, where she was pulling Carolina's leg towards her own face, leaning back, and you could see the knee basically popping in the direction that a knee should never ever pop. Having issues with my knees because of a similar kind of incident, not in a fight, but where my knee went 90 degrees the wrong way, that made my nuts just seize up. It was a brutal finish. So yeah, I'm going with Ariana Lipski's knee bar.
You know, it was weird that you were going to mention, because as I was like doing my research for this, I weirdly in my head thought you were going to pick that, so I didn't pick that one on purpose, but I did pick one that you mentioned for your second one. My sub of the year has got to be Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, it was glorious.
It's definitely glorious, just because of the way she set it up, but not only that, the history she's made behind it. It was the first knee bar in women's MMA, in a UFC bout in women's mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. So it was just obviously an iconic moment for not only her, but for the sport. She's pulled off a sub, the first one in women's UFC history. So it's, for me, that sort of weighed out the outcome of, obviously, of the award. And not only that, she's been on an absolute tear as well.
Yeah.
But that knee bar, but the way she was able to just set it up so smoothly,
yeah,
it was just incredible.
It was a really, really clever, and just watch it back to kind of like refresh my memory. The way she kind of goaded Seifert into leaving a leg there, then was able to ankle pick and then just work her way down the leg to get the leg lock and really crank on it. Yeah, it was a great pick, and you couldn't go wrong with either of those winning sub of the year.
Definitely.
But then let's go to what most casual fighters want to see in the UFC: knockouts. And this year has definitely not disappointed in terms of knockouts. So for my shortlist, I've got Chaos Williams, and he's a very, very short range, almost kind of like a Bruce Lee style one-inch punch, a lightning fast jab that stiffened Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. And this is a guy who's got a solid chin. We've seen him take shot after shot, and Chaos Williams was able to just starch him to the point where his legs and his toes were already stiff before he'd even fallen to the ground. Then I've got Joaquin Buckley, where he threw a body kick to his opponent, Imper Casanage, who caught the kick, and Joaquin Buckley was able to do a twisting, spinning back kick that landed clean on the chin of Imper, and he went asleep, falling down like a tower of Jenga blocks. It was just beautiful. Then I've got Cody Garbrandt with his buzzer-beating right hook that starched Rafael Assuncao, just because of the way he was kind of being forced up against the cage and then just ducked down with all his power and just came out almost like a street fighter Hadouken and just absolutely just KO'd Rafael Assuncao. It's just a beautiful punch. But I cannot not go with a very, very recent one. Kevin Holland, on the ground against elite level BJJ fighter Jacare Souza, turtling up when Souza was really trying to dominate and get him into a very dangerous position. He hits Souza with kind of like a backhand hammer fist slash chop to the temple. That rocks Souza, and then as Kevin was able to try and get to his feet, before he was even on his actual the soles of his feet, he unleashed two devastating right hands that absolutely spun Souza's jaw. That guy is just absolutely brutal. So yeah, my KO of the year is Kevin Holland, just literally taking off the jaw of Jacare Souza.
That's it. That's a brilliant pick. I were actually going to go with that one myself. When I was thinking about it, like, you don't see that one every day. You don't see someone just getting knocked out, getting both of them trying to stand up at the same time, and then Kevin Holland were able to just crack him perfectly, and that were it. That was just game over for him. But when I was thinking about this, what actually stands out most, and what makes the air on the back of my neck stand up, and the only one for me this year, what I've seen it on my, that was just power and just scary, and that award for me has got to go to Jan Blachowicz when he absolutely KO'd Corey Anderson with that perfect overhand right kick. Corey Anderson just came in with a little leg kick, and Jan Blachowicz was already, you can already tell when he was fainting, and when Corey was trying to make him faint when he was going in and not throwing anything, you could tell that right hand were always getting ready to set up, and just the perfect time when he were able to land it, it was just a straight overhand right, and then that big hammer fist just to follow it up, and then to sell your next fight with John Bones Jones straight after that, straight away. When you sell your fight with John Bones Jones straight after, when you've just done an absolute brutal KO on Corey Anderson, especially at the elite level, because obviously there's been a lot of KOs this year, but even though we're talking in the UFC, there's still, like Daniel Cormier says, there's still levels to it, and when you're actually up there with Jan, who's now the champion, when he was fighting for that contender spot, it was just unexpected. I wasn't expecting him to knock Corey Anderson out that quick and that easily, to be honest with you. So that, it always just sticks in my mind, the perfect left, the perfect overhand right, and then just the brutal hammer fist straight afterwards, yeah. which is super necessary.
It's a great knockout. Like you said, there's been so many good knockouts. I mean, so many good fights and so many good events. So let's talk about them for a few minutes. Let's go with event of the year. I've got four all numbered pay-per-views because obviously that's what the majority of the fans kind of get into. It's you don't often hear of many fans watching week to week like we do. So first I'm going to go and mention UFC 250, obviously a mark out number for the UFC, but we had Alex Perez getting the KO against Fomega with the brutal calf kicks. We had that Sean O'Malley one punch knockout of Eddie Wineland, which kind of set him on that hype train of his. We had the Aljamain Sterling first round rear naked choke of Corey Sandhagen, that absolutely brutal Cody Garbrandt knockout of Aspen Sal. And we had Amanda Nunes able to defend her featherweight title against Felicia Spencer. Then I want to look at UFC 251, which was a few weeks later. Jiří Prochazka making a massive statement when he slept Volkan Oezdemir. Amanda Ribas getting the sub against Paige VanZant. Another kind of really interesting sub where Paige tried to do a headstand to escape the sub, was unable to, and that was the fight that sent her out of the UFC. We had Rose Namajunas coming back to win the split decision against Jessica Andrade after a war between the two former champions. Then we had Petr Yan picking up the vacant bantamweight title against Jose Aldo. Alexander Volkanovski retaining his featherweight title against his former champion Max Holloway. And then obviously Kamaru Usman dominating Street Jesus Jorge Masvidal to retain his welterweight title. Then I want to kind of give a bit of a shout out to UFC 249, where we got Calvin Kattar making a statement by knocking out Jeremy Stephens, and Ngannou just saying he wants that title when he beat Rozenstruik in 20 seconds. Henry Cejudo beating former champion Dominic Cruz, and then going out on top as a double UFC champion, and giving his retirement speech as Triple C out. Then we've got Justin Gaethje destroying the kind of aura of El Kakua, absolutely killing the boogeyman and leaving Tony Ferguson a shell of the fighter that he once was. But I'm actually going to go with, and you can call it recency bias, I suppose, but I'm going to go with UFC 256. We had Chase Hooper with a heel hook against Peter Barrett, Rafael Fiziev KOing Renato Moicano, Cub Swanson absolutely just smashing the laugh out of Daniel Pineda, Cyril Gagne and his controversial knockout of Junior Dos Santos, Kevin Holland and that brutal murdering of Jacare Souza, Mackenzie Dern finally understanding what a broken nose feels like when she got the decision victory against Verna Yandiroba, the continued kind of downfall of Tony Ferguson, but that kind of being matched with the rise of Charles Oliveira in that loss to De Bronx, and then arguably the greatest flyweight title match that we've ever had when Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno, after both fighting separate fights 2 weeks beforehand, come and give us a draw, and just showing that these flyweights have power, have skill, and luckily we'll hopefully get to see that again in early 2021. So my pick is UFC 256.
Not even kidding, your picks there are absolutely brilliant. The points you've just covered, like UFC 256, like you're saying, might have been the recent one, so you might call it bias, but go and watch it again.
Yeah.
The finishes that were on that, and the spectacular main event between Figueiredo and
Brandon Moreno.
Don't know why I've literally forgotten. I'm just getting too excited about that event. It's still recent. For how that fight went from when Figueiredo kicked him in the balls and got a point took away, and then beat, that fight ended up being a majority draw. It's definitely going to happen again, and I cannot wait for the second fight. And that was going to be my original pick, because it just got me so excited, but I cannot overlook UFC 249. Just the finishes on that card, and then obviously the controversial way that Henry Cejudo's retiring from the sport with what I think is a win. People still think it's controversial, but he won that fight against Dominic Cruz, retired on top, and then obviously going on to, which no one thought that fight was going to go that way. Now let's put it in perspective. People knew that this was going to be an absolute war, but no one thought that Justin Gaethje was going to be able to just beat up Tony Ferguson the way he did, because bar from that uppercut what landed in the second or third round and what dropped Gaethje, other than that it was just all Gaethje from start to finish. And El Kakui just couldn't do nothing about it. He was getting hit that hard, his body was literally turning, and Gaethje was just basically pushing him, and when he were pushing him, he was going bouncing off against the octagon, and you don't see anyone doing that to El Kakui. And
no,
to be honest with you, that's broke El Kakui. El Kakui is not going to look the same again. Tony Ferguson is not going to be that sort of fighter again. And I can put my money on that probably with the way that he got finished by Oliveira and the way he looked against Oliveira. You don't see someone doing that to him. And the way you see Gaethje, you were able to just absolutely destroy him. But not only that, his cornerman, Trevor Whitman, like one of the best coaches out there, like the advice was telling him to just slow down. Like normal Gaethje does, he loves being in a war. And that's, you don't see no one wanting to go for a war with Tony Ferguson. And you don't see anyone's corner basically telling their fighter to calm down against Tony Ferguson. If you give Tony Ferguson the space and the pressure and the room to work, he's going to take it. And Gaethje were able to give him none of that and take it all for himself. And when Trevor Whitman told him to calm down, you're trying to kill him, just basically beat him up. He listened to his corner right there, and then he listened to his head coach. So not only were he in that pressure of the one of the biggest fights of the year, which could potentially still win the best fight of the year, and he were able to keep a composed attitude, still able to listen to his corner and go out there and put on a spectacular show against El Kakoui, a show that people thought that this is going to be one of the toughest tests for Justin Gaethje, and he absolutely steamrolled Tony Ferguson. And Tony Ferguson didn't have no answer. He were able to do nothing about it, and his soul left his body in that fight. It's as simple as that.
And it's still not back now, because obviously, like we said, Charles Oliveira destroyed him very recently. So
that's it. So definitely, my event for 2020 is definitely going to be UFC 249.
Great pick. So now let's go on to single fights. For me, there's been quite a few. I mean, this year UFC have provided us with so much content. It was actually harder to pick out memorable fights because we've watched so many. But the few that I've plucked out of the bag are Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier at UFC Vegas 4, and also Dan Hooker versus Paul Felder back in February of this year. Hooker was able to beat Felder, but unfortunately lost to Dustin Poirier. But with both performances, we really got a feeling of the heart, the grit, the power, and the technique that Dan Hooker really has got. And he kind of really made a name for himself this year with two performance of the nights and two potential fights of the year, because he's just proved himself to be an elite level fighter. Then I've got Figueiredo versus Moreno. Like I said, this is arguably the best flyweight fight we've ever seen. Two guys just beating the living piss out of each other for five rounds, getting a draw, which means hopefully we'll get this run back. But what makes this more significant is the fact that these two guys had a fight just 2 weeks beforehand, and was able to still man up for this event and bring us such an amazing fight. But the one I'm going to go with, my winner, is from UFC 248. Weili Zhang defending her strawweight title against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna obviously was one of the most dominant women fighters in the UFC. Lost her title and kind of lost her way and ended up dropping quite a few fights, and was not the fighter that we all thought that she was. We thought that she'd kind of lost a bit of pace, lost a bit of passion for fighting. Earns herself a title shot against Zhang. Nobody giving her the slightest bit of a hope against such a dominant fighter in Weili Zhang. Really kind of come out in the last couple of years and just destroyed that strawweight division. And we got probably the greatest strawweight fight in women's history, maybe even the greatest women's fight in no matter the weight class, because these two actually gave it their all, left absolutely everything in that octagon, went five rounds hell for leather, both just taking shots after shots after shots. And the visual of a Joanna Jędrzejczyk just looking like the Elephant Man, with the amount of swelling and just like contusions on her face, but that didn't speak the whole story. The fact is, she held her own against a very, very dominant Weili Zhang, and many people believe that she may have been robbed in that decision. I'm particularly not one of them. I think she really made a good performance of herself, but I still think that Zhang won the fight. But yeah, these two women just set the mark for women's MMA in the UFC in 2020. So for me, the winner of fight of the year has to be Weili Zhang versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Definitely. That was honestly my second pick. The fight between them two, not only did they set a record in their fight, you can't ask for a better title belt than them two. It was, like you've already said, in my opinion, it literally is the best women's bout in the UFC. What I've seen today, and it's going to take something a lot more to make that bout basically leave my mind. But the fight of the year, which just always makes me stand up on edge and always just like it just always gets me rattled up and just it gets just super excited, to be honest with you. And it's got to be Paul Felder versus Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker was an absolute animal in that fight. He's taking all the spirit and the pride from City Kickboxing, training with Israel Adesanya, and honestly believing he's going to be world champion. And this was literally today when he fought Paul Felder, his biggest test. And we already know the Irish Dragon. We love him on the Five Rounds podcast. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute animal. And if you're fighting him, you best be on your A game, because he'll make you pay for it. And did he make Dan Hooker pay for it in this fight? Yeah, Dan Hooker did go on to fight Dustin Poirier and lose. But in this fight particular, it was just from start to finish, five round fight, just throwing leather to chin. And that's all they were doing. They both came out looking like they've been in a car crash. And you couldn't ask for more. And I know a lot of people are, oh, I like knockouts, I like finishes. But in all serious sense, when a fight goes five rounds, especially this sort of fight, it just makes you appreciate what mixed martial arts is. That two people can actually physically fight for this long and this much and that much output for 25 minutes. And you personally not being bored is just phenomenal. You couldn't ask for more. The just respect that went into that fight and the respect that both men basically gained coming out of that fight is phenomenal. And one of them should have gone down. One of them should have gone to sleep in one of them rounds. And none of them did. Like, Dan Hooker looked like he had an extra chin on his head.
Yeah.
And Paul Felder was literally red in the face. He was blood absolutely everywhere. And There were no giving up in none of them. Even at the last buzzer at the end of the fifth round, they both still had a couple of rounds left in them.
Yeah.
Like that literally could have gone on till it was like sudden death. And to be honest with you, I reckon it would have been till like the referee, all right, used to need to calm down now, right, stop. Well, it's just one of them fights that always gets me excited to watch, and especially Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. Has got to be the best fight for me of the year.
Yeah, it was an absolutely great fight, and like you said, these two just they put on a performance, and it was just absolutely brutal to watch. They just wanted to beat the life out of each other, and they certainly did that. And UFC Auckland had a hell of a main event there. So before we get into the two main awards of female and male fighter of the year, I just wanted to kind of throw a little bit of props towards a section of UFC that sometimes doesn't get the respect it's due. And I think with this year, I think it's time to shine a little bit of light. I want to talk about commentary, commentators. So if COVID and the kind of lack of fans that we've had in attendance has done one good thing, it's that we get these interactions between the fighters and the commentary that we would not normally get because of the cheering and the screaming from the crowd. And it's brought some really funny and interesting moments. For example, we had Ricky Simone flexing his muscles because he heard Daniel Cormier saying he looks swole. We've had Paul Felder jumping up out of his seat when he saw that ninja kick KO from
flying backwards
from Joaquin Buckley. It was amazing. We had Andrei Arlovsky and John Annick waving at each other in the post-fight interviews.
I see you.
Yeah. Then we had Dustin Poirier telling Dan Hooker he should listen to Bisping when Bisping said that he had two quick cup shots, and he said, "Come on, dude." And then Michael replied with, "That's a smart guy. People should live their lives by that motto." We had Dan Hardy mentioning Hannibal Lecter and Hannibal of Carthage being terrifying, and DC going, "I have no idea who Hannibal of Carthage is, but the way you say Carthage, I absolutely love it." And then Dan Hardy saying, "It's the guy who took the elephants over the Alps," and Daniel's going, "Yeah, I really should know who that dude is." Then we had DC doing impressions of Rafael Assunção when he was KO'd by Cody Garbrandt just to make Joe Rogan pop. And then at that same event, we had DC avoiding eye contact with Joe Rogan when he was talking about eye pokes being an instant point deduction. And when Joe throws it over to DC, he says, "Oh, you're very quiet over there." And DC's like, "Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you because I poked some dudes in the eye before and I really was like, shit, he's going to throw this over to me and I have no idea what I'm going to say." So yeah, we've really had like a lot of fun with the crowd and with the commentators and especially here when we're watching the show, because it's been multiple times when we've said something and then we've seen, heard the commentators do it. I'm sure they've got the Kirby House all bugged for information. But I wanted to kind of just give an award for who I think is has been the commentator of the year. Especially with having so many events over this kind of COVID era. I mean, we give UFC a lot of shit for keep putting on the events. But to be absolutely fair, they have knocked out the park, giving us week after week content, giving us the most clear and trustworthy testing, the most open kind of reports about fighters getting infected and coming off the fights, and really kind of keeping COVID out at bay whilst putting on show after show after show. So props to UFC for doing that. Then when we get to the commentary, we've had guys like Paul Felder, Dan Harder, Dominic Cruz and Michael Bisping really kind of holding the fort down for these week on week shows at Vegas and Fire Island. Then we've had DC and Joe Rogan coming in for the massive events with John Anik. But for me, my winner has got to be Michael Bisping. He's brought knowledge, charisma, he brings humility as well. He's always kind of still willing to learn, but he's brought comedy to the booth. He's made UFC commentary fun for me this year, and he's really done well to make that transition from former fighter, former UFC champion, to being one of the best analysts for fighting that UFC's got. So my commentator of the year has got to be the Count Michael Bisping.
Absolutely, you can't argue with that. From a commentator's point of view, he's absolutely knocked it out of the park. From someone who started doing it and people were sort of giving him shit, saying he basically didn't know what he was doing, to turning out to being, for me, one of the best commentary personnel on that team. And especially when they're broadcasting and when he's on there with the likes of Paul Felder or Dominic Cruz, the sort of, like you say, the sort of knowledge you get out of him is brilliant, because not only are they competent and are they good at it, they've been there, they know what they're talking about, and they can bring points across that you maybe aren't seeing on the screen. Whereas if a fighter's just done something or is about to do something, because they're of their own knowledge, they'll broadcast it to you and you'll be able to like, oh yeah, he did do that. So they help you a hell of a lot to follow it. And in Michael's case, he's done that near enough throughout most of these events that he's been able to commentate. He's tried his best throughout, not only to be professional and giving us knowledge, but keeping it real as well, in a way, being humble and showing that, yeah, you might be on UFC, but we're still humans at the end of the day. If something's funny, he's one of them guys, he's somewhat, in a way, going to make fun of it. And that the clip of that just sticks in my head of when Dustin Poirier just like, listen to Bisping. And Bisping like, that's a smart man right there. People should live by that motto. And he just sticks in my head just perfectly. So I can just imagine him saying it. He's just imagine him just there, just saying that to himself, just looking in the mirror. It's like, you're a smart guy.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it as well. Is it's the typical kind of Northern English sense of humour. We if there's one thing we're known for, it's being quick witted and like being able to have a fly, funny jab, just roll off the top of the tongue. And he's really brought that, I think, with UFC.
Yeah, definitely. That's what got me. Obviously, he's just the humour, the case that he brings, and his ability to not only just give us the knowledge and enjoy what he's doing. The fact is that he could have easily retired and basically moved on to something else, but yet he stuck around. He's given us plenty of years of shit talking. Now hopefully he gives us plenty of years of commentary moments as well. Yeah. So he's definitely the commentary personnel of the year for the Five Rounds podcast.
Absolutely. Now let's get into the two big awards, the female and the male fighter of the year. Let's go with the female award first, and for me this was fairly clean cut. There was pretty much only two people who really stood out for the female fighter of the year. First one is Valentina Shevchenko. She's absolutely continued that dominance in the flyweight division. Totally destroyed number one contender Katlyn Chookagian in February, and then got a dominating decision win over Jennifer Meyer, where she actually beat Meyer at her own game on the ground, really dominating Meyer and defending that title twice. But for me, there's one standout woman who's been head and shoulders over everybody else this year, and that's Mackenzie Dern. She ended 2019 with a loss to Amanda Ribas. Then in May of 2020, she subbed Hannah Cyphers in the submission that we spoke about earlier with the amazing kind of ankle pick knee bar. And then she followed it up with an arm bar against Randa Marcos in September, and then rounded off the year with the decision win against a very vicious Verna Janderoba, where she was happy that she got her first ever broken nose. So yeah, my female fighter of the year has to be Mackenzie Dern.
Absolutely. Are you looking at my list? I've got Mackenzie Dern as well. She's obviously been the breakout, the female fighter of the year. For me, just off the sheer willingness to keep going in there, keep competing, winning back to back. She's on a submission tear, then obviously a decision win where she can show that she's not only a submission machine, she can take you to the decisions if you basically allow her to.
And take a punch.
Yeah, well, that's she's got a chin on her. But the reason she's the fighter of the year, female fighter of the year, is going back to the knee bar finish, just making history in the female women's MMA with going with the first ever knee bar. That puts her, stands her out in 2020 above everybody else. Now obviously there's been a lot of different fighters that I could have nominated, but just in this case, well, in that case alone, she's the female fighter of the year, making history and just having the willingness to keep it consistent, keep going forward, take the losses on the chin, keep moving forward and not giving up. Mm-hmm. Definitely the female fighter of the year.
Yep. Now let's go into the male award. And for me, again, there was two massive standouts in this award. The first one we mentioned earlier, he won my breakout of the year award, Chimaev, with his three-fight win streak, only debuting in the second half of the year in July, and able to pick off three very quick wins, and would have potentially had a fourth one if it wasn't for COVID. But my actual winner is someone who Carlos mentioned earlier on. He's already won an award from me with the knockout of the year, and it's Kevin Holland. Again, kind of like Mackenzie Dern, he ended 2019 with a loss. Lost to Brendan Allen. Then he first fought in 2020 in May when he KO'd Anthony Hernandez, who was then looking at potentially being a big name in the UFC. Then he beat Joaquin Buckley in August. He beat Darren Stewart by decision in September. He beat Charles Antiveros in October via a beautiful slam submission. And then he had that star-making KO of Jacare Souza on December the 12th this year. The only fighter to end the year with five wins out of five, forcing himself into the title picture. I can't put anybody above Kevin Holland this year.
That's it. It's literally hard to argue with that, with his spectacular run. And like I said with before, when I mentioned him, he's been an absolute breakout star along with Chimaev, and yeah, I don't think he's got that much attention, and he's due it, to be honest with you. He definitely is due it. He's definitely a a fighter to be watching. He's always exciting. He's always fun to watch. But for me, for Male Fighter of the Year award has got to go to a guy who a lot of people thought when he came into the organisation, a lot of people thought, oh, here we go again. This is just another heavy hitter who's going to get knocked out. And yeah, to some extent, people were right. He did take a couple of losses, but he came back from that with the work of his team, with his own work ethic, and with his own willingness to continue. He was able to end up fighting for the title. And the fighter is Justin Gaethje. He's not only just been able to be that star that he's been so respectful, because he's one of them fighters you think, he's like that, what's he like outside of the octagon? And to my knowledge, and as far as a lot of people say, he's one of the kindest guys you'd be able to meet. He wanted to help kids if he didn't want to be a fighter. You can't get kinder than that.
It's a great pick. Justin Gaethje has been an absolutely outstanding fighter. Like you said, he come into the UFC with a massive hype train, unbeaten in his professional career. Took a loss, but learned from it and was able to change his kind of one direction go attitude to really add levels to his game. And you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about his fight with was it Hooker? No, it wasn't Hooker.
Ferguson,
that's it, sorry, apologies. Where he took the advice from his coach to tone it down a little bit and not have to go 100% go. It's just, I've never seen a fighter develop the way that Justin Gaethje has developed in such a short space of time, and really went from being, like I said, oh, here we go, big fighter coming in, big fighter in a small pond coming into the UFC, they're going to get starched. Kind of like the Eddie Alvarez or the Ill Will Brooks, where they made a big name and then when they come to the big show, they just can't quite cut it. Justin Gaethje has shown he can cut it, and he's one of the very elite fighters, and potentially he's going to be not just an interim champion, but a full-fledged UFC champion in the very, very near future.
Well, that's obviously why I had to pick him. He's the work he's been able to do over the past year is win after win after win, and then obviously his upset loss against Khabib, which, to be honest, was not surprising. Khabib's an absolute beast, but in my sense, if Khabib doesn't come back, Justin Gaethje will be the champion. He's going to be the hardest fight for any fighter in that top five. And if you want to be a champion at division, odds are you're probably going to have to get through him. And I don't want that.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the end of the Five Rounds year-end awards. Lots and lots to pick at there. And it's been an absolutely outstanding year for the UFC in terms of content. But definitely check in on us in the new year. We've got many things in the pipeline. As Carlos mentioned at the beginning, Carlos is bringing a very cool little interesting project to Five Rounds with his Five Rounds interviews, where he's going to be talking to up and coming and big name fighters and finding out why they love MMA the way that we do. So yeah, they'll be dropping early January, so yeah, definitely check them out. But follow on Twitter at DJ Kirby, follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos, and if you're a burgeoning UFC fighter, definitely go and drop him a DM. He'd love to speak to you. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod. Follow the networks at Shooting the Sports Ish, at Chair Shop Media Group, and at Visionaries Global Media. Thank you for all your support throughout 2020 and throughout the 100 episodes that we've put out. This show wouldn't be anything without you guys and gals listening along and giving us feedback and really enjoying MMA the way that we enjoy MMA. Thank you all for listening. Have a happy, happy new year. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.